Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hi, Paul. It's nice to be here with you, and I'd like to welcome all our listeners to the next chapter with Charlie. This is the show where we discuss ideas about what you might do to move on to your next chapter in life, whether that be large or small. Today, my special guest is Karen Hill, with more than 20 years' experience in leading corporations and individuals. Karen is passionate about enabling individuals to realize their full potential. Karen is a multi-gifted consultant with past positions of vice president, department head, and consultant with companies like General Motors, Hughes Aircraft, and Wright Management, which is an international talent management firm. She has lots of experience. In 2012, however, Karen decided that the corporate world was no longer what she wanted, and she started her own consulting firm called Develop, Inc. She is passionate about people and their development, but two objectives seem to guide her many talents. One is enabling individuals to realize their full potential, and two is corporate social responsibility. I'd like to devote the first half of our time to talking about how to start a new business. And the second half of our time after the break, we're going to talk about corporate social responsibility. I think with the influence of millennials, many companies are moving toward this noble cause. Before we do that, let's find out a bit about Karen. So let's turn up her mic and see what we can learn from her. Karen, welcome to the next chapter with Charlie. It's so nice to have you here.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
Well, it's going to be fun. So let's just get right into it. You know, we don't, you know, I like to get right into the meat of the show. You were a very successful business executive, and then you decided to start your own consulting company. How did you come about that decision?
It's a great question you ask, and it's funny because so often I think people, we don't always practice what we preach. And so over the years, I found myself driven to help others and to help them develop themselves. So looking at where they currently are and then where they want to be and how to close that gap. So I think back, my father and my brother now are all entrepreneurial and they've started their own business, and my brother's taken it over and they wanted me to help, and it's not my kind of business to work in the manufacturing field. So.
Right.
That really wasn't my interest. When I was in the corporate world, I loved it. I loved so much about it. I loved being on teams. I loved leading teams. I loved working with people. It was more of a, I won't say systematic, but more of a routine day when you've got to get a lot of approvals from above to do anything new. And I always found myself wanting to try new things. I liked to watch trends in the development field. I like to try out new things. And it, after a number of years, probably about 15 years, I felt like I want to make my own decisions, but I want to inquire with others to kind of create that shared vision and ideas so we could all collaborate together.
Yeah, that's got to be very frustrating to all the red tape and the hoops that you've got to jump through to get something done that you know is really going to help the company, but you can't get it done.
Yeah, it was okay when I first started. I had to take an internship from my undergrad, and that was with Hughes Aircraft Company. It's aging me, I know, but which was part of General Motors. And I learned so much at that moment in time. General Motors, fast forward, decided to sell us. And so then again, we had a different identity to fit into. And then another, you know, fast forward from there, another company purchased us. So we became three different identities in that time frame.
And three different management styles.
Oh, yes, yes. And I must have had, in 12 years or so, I forget the exact number, I must have had at least 10 bosses.
Oh, my goodness.
And, yeah, frustrating, sure. If I look back at it now, I learned from it. So if there were any frustrations, then I think, you know, I probably don't want to lead like them, possibly. Or there are things I picked up as far as from mentors I still stay in touch with one of my favorite mentors. He's on the East Coast right now, and he was my boss and really believed in me. And he had left and kind of let me take his role as a head of HR, and it was a great learning experience. But
and, you know, and I know you do. You do a lot of coaching, and you mm-hmm. do a lot of work with HR and strategic teams. Mm-hmm. Your experience with having 10 different bosses and working in corporate environments that you liked, that you didn't like, had to really give you lots of insight and also some compassion for the people that you're working with. That you I know how you feel. I've felt that way before. Is that true?
Absolutely true. And it's, you know, the old phrase, I know how you feel, and the other person would say, no, you don't. You've not been in my shoes. But I think I've learned from that as I look at what I do now when I coach and when I career coach especially. I don't look at it as frustrating at all. I look at it as sharing some of the things I learned for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's great that, you know, that you don't have to say, I know how you feel, because just knowing how they feel gives you ideas of how to help them.
Right.
Because you do know how they feel, whether they want to, of course they're going to say, no, you don't. But you do know how they feel. So what made you, if you're entrepreneurial, your family's entrepreneurial, yeah. what made you decide to leave that craziness of that world besides that it was crazy?
I think I'm such an explorer, and as I get older, I'm more of an explorer, and I'm more adventurous. So I take more, if I could say, cautiously risk-taking moves. I don't know if that's an oxymoron.
No, it's not. Absolutely, it's not.
Yeah. So, you know, being in corporate America for so many years, and then after that, I sold to corporate America. So I would sell leadership development and career transition services.
That was with Wright.
Yes.
Yes.
And that was 10 years. And I loved
You were with
that.
Wright 10 years.
Yes. Yes.
Wright is, for those of you who don't know, is a very, very famous talent management company and also outplacement. A lot of people don't know outplacement, but if you're laid off or terminated by a corporation, the corporation pays for you to go to a company that will help you find a new career or a new job. Did I explain that
absolutely,
reasonably
yes.
well?
No, that's beautiful. Yes, and I did that for 10 years. And towards the end of that, literally in that time frame, I had 12 bosses in 10 years because the company was going through many, many changes, acquisition, change of ownership.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really made me want to go on my own, because if I look back, I learned that I'm more of an entrepreneur. I would try to share the voice of the customer with the company, and the company had their strategies to sell other items that I didn't think the customer needed. So we had heart-to-heart conversations, and towards the end of 10 years, it was, I think I'll go do this on my own. So
I think I'll go do this on my own. There's a little bit more to it than that. Were there fears that you're saying, how am I going to make a living? How am I going to produce income? Was that an issue with you?
Yes, of course. I think it was a pride issue, actually, more than a monetary issue. I'm very lucky to be married to a man for 30 years, and he really wants me to do what I want to do and allows me to kind of branch out. So financially, it was a huge change. And yeah, it feared me. You know, I had a fear of that. I also want to be a, you know, part of the breadwinner in the family, but don't have to be the top. And so I think it was a lot due to him and allowing me to explore and knowing my brother is doing well now from my dad's company that he started.
Yeah. What about fears of failure in this? Was that an issue? Or did you just have so much self-confidence that you said, I know I can do this?
It's a good question. I think it went back and forth. So as soon as I stepped down of the corporate America, I was lucky to have all these wonderful relationships with my past clients and colleagues. And so I would work I would meet with them. I would talk with them. I would ask them their input. And, of course, everyone likes to give their input. So I learned a lot in probably 6 months to 8 months of not doing anything and not getting any money. Not getting any money, let's say.
Right.
And so I learned a lot from them and, again, from my mentors. And I stepped back and back to the point of practicing what you preach. And so it's kind of stepping back and exploring, what are you good at? What are you not so good at? Recognizing that if you're not so good at something, don't try to fake it, of course. Because you're not going to be happy, and your receiver will not be happy. And it may not go in the right direction. So I think I also thought a lot about what I've done in the past that really made me happy. And that word happy is a powerful word, and people...
It's poo-poo to nowadays,
but I don't think it shouldn't be.
No, it shouldn't be.
It really...
I just listened to a podcast. Everybody knows here that Tim Ferriss is my... And I listen to everything that he does. And he has one on it was a very interesting podcast. And he asked the question... somebody asked him the question, how do you know when to quit? Or versus your business is just in kind of a slump, and you need to stay in there and hang in. How do you know when to do which? And he said, I can't answer that question without giving you a bunch of BS. So what I did, he emailed all his friends, and, you know, he's got all these high powerful entrepreneurial friends, and they got excited and they came on the show. And two of the people, Debbie Millman and, I can't remember the name of the man who said it. Both of them said, if you love what you're doing, if you absolutely love what you're doing and you see a vision for the future, no matter where it is right now, don't quit. Just if you love it, don't quit, because you just don't find things that you love. What does that strike a chord with you?
Absolutely. I mean, you can hear my smile. If I'm on the phone with somebody, you can tell when I'm happy about something.
Well, yeah, and you seem happy all the time, so I can't tell when you're happy, because you always seem happy. Let me ask you one more question about starting a business, and then I want to move to the individual. When I started a business, there was a phrase that was out there: "You don't know what you don't know." Now, that may sound like, you know, the sound of one hand clapping, but basically is there are going to be things that you're not ready for, no matter what you do in strategic planning, no matter how many people you talk to, no matter how many questions you ask, you don't know things that are going to come up, so you don't know what you don't know. What did you find out? Were there any things that as you got into your business, you discovered that you didn't know in your strategic planning, and you were surprised and said, oh my goodness, I've got to make some kind of adaptation or some kind of change to my business because of this?
I think it goes back to, first of all, I find myself following a lot of old cliches. And so I think it goes back to fear of the unknown. And you asked about fear. And I don't know what I'm supposed to look like. I don't know what my identity should look like when I'm out on my own versus being in a corporate world and having a corporate stamp on my face, forehead.
Right.
So I remember talking to a gentleman looking to go work in his organization, which was a nonprofit organization. He said something very compelling to me. He said, you're great at this and this and this, but you've got too many directions that you're going into. And so it confuses the public, and you don't have your identity straight yet.
Huh.
And that was key.
That's really funny, because the same thing happened with me. You know Vance Caesar?
Yeah,
Vance Caesar is a real famous coach and professor and all. And I talked to Vance, and I went to Vance, and I was talking about starting my company, and I broke out all my materials, all the directions I want to go, and Vance looked at me and said, this is not going to work. This is crazy. We've got to throw 95% of it away, pick one thing, and say, this is where I'm going. Which one do you want to pick?
Yes.
And he's really into the stick man. Draw your stick man target. Who is a target that you want to help, and how do you want to help them? Then that will help you identify which of the many talents that you have that you want to use.
Yeah. And the other cliche, I think, is I don't really like this cliche, but life is too short. And it really, when you think about all the things you want to do in this world, or that you can do in this world, you got to pick some of your favorites that are good for you and others.
Well, I have two thoughts on that.
Yeah.
One, do you know why cliches last?
Because they're meaningful.
Because they're true.
They're true, okay.
they're true. We may get tired of hearing them, but they're true. And the second is life is short. I've talked about this before. The Stoics, especially Seneca, was really into death. And he wasn't into death like, oh, I want to die. He's just saying, I'm going to die, so I need to live a good life until that day. I need to, and they would all, I want to get one, except it costs too much money. They had real human skulls that they would have on their desk just to remind them of death. And I thought that would be so cool. But, you know, human skull costs $1,500. And so I could get a fake one, but I wanted a real one.
The real thing.
I wanted a real dead person. Oh, geez. So that my audience knows I'm a little strange, so now they know I'm very strange. Okay, let me ask you this one question before we take a break.
Sure.
I know you're really devoted to the well-being of your clients and your friends, and as you have written, you're passionate about enabling individuals to realize their full potential. Now, here's my question on this, and this I seem to be asked this question a lot of guests. I think many, many people are far from their full potential. I wanted to say most people, but I decided to just say many, many. But I really mean most. But what's even more important than that, they don't know what their potential is. How do you help people discover what is your potential?
Let me add something on to that. Over the last 5 years, I've noticed why I want to help them do that so much. And I think it's because I could not have my own kids. I love kids. I love all different ages. I'm fascinated by people and why they do what they are doing or want to do. So because of that curiosity, I love to ask questions. I love to try to get them to really stop and think, not answer quickly, but sometimes rhetorical questions, and make them stop. So if I'm meeting with a potential coachee, I will ask a question. They'll try to answer and move on. Say, no, stop. Let's really think about that.
Let's pursue that.
Yeah, and I think it's because I never got to develop kids. I can develop in other ways. I can develop. I go.
So these are your kids.
You know, it's funny because they may be a 75-year-old kid or they may be a 15-year-old kid. But my husband and I find ourselves going to a local diner every week. And we befriend the waiters and waitresses. And they look forward to it, and we look forward to it every week, coming in there and asking, how's the job, or how's your school? We're always pushing to have people finish school.
That's great.
It's rewarding. Yeah. It gives me the good chills.
You know, you are a facilitator and a question asker, and I didn't realize your curiosity, because I think that's one of the things that drive me is curiosity. I'm always wanting to know what other people are doing.
So I know you are.
I'm exactly. Filled with questions, and I can drive people crazy asking them questions. But I think that's a great way to pursue that. Don't let people off when they're you're trying to find out what their potential is. Don't let them say, oh, I just don't know.
Yeah.
You know, you just keep asking a bunch of different questions. What do you really love to do? I have two questions that I love to ask people. What do you love to do, and what excites you? You know, and that will get the conversation going.
I'll get you out of bed and happy to take a shower and move forward, right?
Yeah, and then when they say nothing, then you go,
say, all right, let's dig into that.
yeah, we got some work to do. Well, today what we have to do is take a break. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the subject I'm really interested in. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. I have my special guest today, Karen Hill, and we just discussed what it takes to start your own business and also what it takes to discover your own potential. Well, now we're going to move to an entirely different subject, and it's something that Karen is very passionate about, and it is corporate social responsibility. Can you tell me what I've been calling it CSR, but what corporate social responsibility, what it really is? I don't even know what it is.
Well, let me tell you first, you're not alone, and there are multiple definitions and terms for it. It's been around, and I hope I'm correct in saying this, about 20 years in different formats and different names. So if you ask, well, first of all, let me say the definition per se on Google is a form of corporate self-regulation integrated into a business model. Okay? That's the goal. It's not always, though. A lot of times companies would like to say, we do CSR, which they think is really giving back. Well, giving back could include volunteering, and a lot of people feel good about that. But then again, as you said earlier, the word poo-poo, sometimes when people talk about being happy. When people volunteer, just for instance, if you've never volunteered before, then you don't get it. But if you get out there and volunteer, let's say, oh, it could be on a, helping the disabled or taking the elderly for walks in their wheelchairs or helping with cancer victims, things like that. There's a plethora of them, even here locally in Orange County. But
you see, I just want to stop because when I'm thinking of volunteering, I'm thinking I have to go to a soup kitchen. That's the only thing that comes to my mind. And you just gave me three ideas I've never even considered. I didn't even know that those were options.
There are so many out there. And the thing that I guess I'll say I pride myself on is I was working with a corporation, a medical devices company, and they had never done any development of their employees. So first, my business partner, who you know very well, Mrs. Pam Hedges, she and I went in there to do some team development. And it was a three-day event, and the third day was empty. We hadn't put anything on the curriculum. So here's Karen doing some research and curriculum design. I'm thinking, oh, wouldn't that be great to add some kind of CSR event onto the third day? Okay, picture this. So the first 2 days, Pam did a lot of the team development aspects and understanding who you are and whose leadership skill, so on and so forth. So the third day, I thought, okay, who can we actually do a team building event with? So instead of me telling the group what we could do, I asked them questions. I said, what is your company all about and what is the purpose? So in this particular case, they worked a lot with the heart.
Okay.
And so there were questions about, oh, well, maybe we could do something, you know, with the Heart Association, American Heart Association, things like that. And so what happened is we came down with five, and we did a team development, and that team development was actually building barbecues. So we built three different barbecues.
What do you mean you built them?
We had them. I purchased three barbecues in these big boxes, came in after lunch, put these three boxes in the room.
No way.
Didn't tell them what we were doing. I wanted to see who rose up as a leader based on what Pam had taught the day before.
Exactly.
So I just observed. I let them just kind of sit there. I said, I'll be back. Well, no, I wasn't coming back. I was around the corner looking and watching.
You didn't even tell them to build it.
No. They had towels over the boxes. So there were three. And it was fascinating, again, to watch who went where and who started pulling the towel off and opening the box. I had given them no directions.
No. I have never heard of such a thing. That's incredible.
And I hadn't either, thinking, oh, Karen, good job, good job. But then later that night, I was so intrigued, I wanted to do more research on it. Well, there are companies that do this already. So regardless.
But you thought of it first.
Okay.
I mean, to you.
In my mind.
In your mind, yeah.
Yeah. So what they did, Charlie, is they all created these barbecues. And here's a lessons learned, too. We're done doing the barbecues. We've got three of them built, right? Very easy to put together. And all of a sudden, on my break, I think it was, I learned that the charity that we were going to donate these to could not take them legally because they were charcoal-burning barbecues. And they would not allow that under their policies because of security.
Oh, so you've got three barbecues at home.
Okay, so here's the thing. I'm standing in front of the group. We're on stage, basically. And I said, okay, guys, I can make a decision, but no, I want you to make a decision here. So one of the people on the team, which was very creative, said, it's Father's Day. Why don't we sell raffle tickets? And then whoever wins the raffle, they take a barbecue home to their father as a gift, right? So that's what they did. And they came up with, I don't know, several thousand, I think, or a few thousand dollars. And what did they do with that money? They took it to the charity.
Oh,
collaborated.
One thing is, how long did it take before the first person took a towel off?
Probably 5 minutes.
Oh, that's all?
Yes.
That's all.
Because we were done with break.
And they're just sitting around. And so somebody just decided to, let's see. And then they just started building on their own. I can't imagine this. I'm just picturing people saying, where is my facilitator?
Yeah.
What is going on?
What's going on?
She just left us, really, and we're paying her. Oh, that is beautiful. That's wonderful.
That's one form of CSR.
That's great. Tell me, why is CSR so important to you?
I don't think I can answer that. I don't know. There's something that is extremely rewarding to me. There's that curiosity, too, that I want to know how I can help and, again, develop people and maybe causes. I think I mentioned I'm diabetic myself, and so it's not for me that I'm on a board, JDRF, but it's for
JDRF,
Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation.
Okay.
I have a lot of pride being on that, and I love the camaraderie and the camaraderie and some of the successes that we gain from just people working together. It's that emotional hook, right? And that's another form of CSR. And so we try to get even corporate America to provide board members to come in and help. And that not only helps them as individuals feel rewarded and giving back, it also helps their corporation. So I hate to say it, but in a business sense, it helps their recruiting purposes. It helps their recognition purposes. Sometimes they'll post something on their website that they've done this or they've given to this or so-and-so is on the board of. And it's just an all-together, it's goodness. And it doesn't bring money to the actual individual, but it sure brings a lot of value to the rest of the organization. And hopefully
the individual.
Yep.
That was really an interesting 2-minute answer that began. I don't think I can answer that question.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? Yeah, you don't allow me to practice my script. I don't have a script anymore, do I?
No. You're one of the few people I even allowed to even consider a script. But you asked, and I just don't say no. Now, a corporation. You mentioned some advantages to the corporation.
Yeah.
There's really one objective of a corporation, and that's to make money. I mean, that's why they're there, to make money. Why should they even get involved in social responsibility?
There's a number of different reasons. Different senior executives will have their opinions. Some will want to just think about money. Others will want to do the give back feeling. Others will want to help their company with their branding, their reputation, and to know that they are a CSR-oriented company. What I have noticed also is that with the millennials, and there's been research on this, that a millennial may have a choice of two different companies to go to. They have two offers. Company A, Company B. Both companies, you know, everything the same. The salary may be lower in A than it is in B. However, in A, they've got a whole practice and initiative on CSR. So they may have teams, they may have committees, they may have partnerships with outside organizations that could be for volunteer reasons. It could be for business ethics. It could be for environmental. So there's a number of different platforms of CSR, but I think it's becoming, not quite yet, it's becoming a given. And so the millennial would most likely go for Company A versus Company B with more money.
Yeah, that was a question I was going to ask you. Is this sort of, I don't want to say millennial-driven, but it is so millennial-supported that it's almost millennial-driven. I mean, this is, for some reason, that's part of their ethos.
Yes. And just in doing research, reading research, 83% of people will trust a company more if it's seen as being socially and environmentally responsible. 68% of people agree that large companies should be actively involved in solving social and environmental problems. And so it's growing. It's definitely growing. It's like a movement, I guess.
Yeah, it's almost anti-capitalism. It doesn't line up with capitalism, although it does, because I think I'm with you and I'm with the millennials. If I was out looking for a job, which, you know, I'm too old, and second of all, a real
never
job.
Too old.
The idea of a job scares the hell out of me. I mean, going into an office, you know, just, you know, I've been independent for so long. But that if I were to do that, a company that I felt that was doing good in the community, whether it was part of their exact mission, that was the mission of the company,
it
was something that they made a side part of their mission, that would attract me to a company very much. That I just think we're here in the world to help. We're not here in the world for greed, and we have to be really careful about that greed incentive.
Now, yes, that is very true, and although that's what company primarily is in business, but I think now so versus 50 years ago, there's a lot more effort to really looking out for others and helping where you can.
Can you tell me, maybe you don't want to name the corporation and maybe you do, I don't know, I don't think it would hurt them, but someone that is doing a good job with corporate responsibility, mm-hmm. social responsibility?
I will tell you the industry. First of all, if you even look on research, there are a plethora of companies that are doing very, very well, like Coca-Cola and Toyota, things like that. For instance, Toyota, okay, I just named it. Toyota, I think it's Toyota, that they will allow each employee a day or two a year to actually go out and do some type of volunteerism, which is part of their policy. It's part of their practice. And again, that moves into helping with recruiting and retention in the brand of the company. I know that Coca-Cola, I'm going to get this wrong, but they're very focused on environmental and what goes into the Coca-Cola and the carbonation, things like that. And then, it's very interesting to see some of the interesting ideas that companies have used to create how they provide to the CSR umbrella.
You said three words that I think you said it once before and we passed over, but I think it is really important that we talked about corporations' goal is making money, but also in order to make money, branding, retention, mm-hmm. and recruiting mm-hmm. are critical to making money.
Mm-hmm.
That you're getting the right people in the door that's how you make your money. It's with the right people. It's mm-hmm. not with the right philosophy. And this is one of the attributes that people may look at to consider you or the company A as a company I'd like to work with, is it somebody that really does care about something in the environment or socially responsible.
Right, and to tag on to just the example of what you're saying in Toyota, I learned last year they asked for some help to create an Orange County company to go down to Camp Pendleton and work with the veterans. And this is where all the synergy comes in, is because of my background in career transition and career coaching and things like that, I said, you know, sure, I'd love to do it. So I took a group of 20 people down, and what we did is we met for 2 days. We had a career...
They were all Toyota people or multi?
No, actually, they were a couple Toyota, and then I brought on a number of people from companies local here.
Right.
Carrington
okay.
Financial was one key one that was very, very helpful with it. And we took 20 people down. We were all recruiters in some manner. So we did career coaching with the veterans who had just been back from deployment. And that was one night. The next night was bringing in other companies who had openings that were veteran-friendly companies. And then the third part was the mock interview. And talk about a change, watching some of these people who have just come out of the military who may have never interviewed in the public life was very rewarding. So that, again, that's part of Toyota's practice.
Oh, my goodness. Just out of curiosity, did anybody get hired out of that?
You know what? That's a great question, and my husband asked me that, too. I don't know the answer to that. There's a lot of gaps in the programs now that could be updated.
Well,
so
it's just beginning. You know, you're learning.
Yeah.
You don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
You know, and now you know one thing you don't know that you can fix.
Yeah.
That's I love that idea. And I know there's at least one company that they're in Pendleton, right? And working with the vets and helping them get jobs.
There are a lot of them. Yes.
Oh, there's a lot of them.
Yes.
Are
yes.
There?
Yeah.
That's great, because where they've come from, It's so difficult to make the transition.
Now that I could not imagine.
No.
I don't know what they feel like.
No.
I learned from them. They learned from me. But I really learned a lot more about the military. So it was rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a lot. I've gained a lot of respect for the military.
Yeah.
I really have.
Yes.
I'd like to start wrapping this up. And what I want to do is my final question for you is... How would you advise corporations to get started if they don't have any sort of corporate social responsibility in initiatives going on in their companies? How would you suggest they get started?
That's a very good question, and I have been able to use a process in the last year and a half with some companies that I had a trusted advisor relationship with, right? They were previous clients. And so I would meet with them, and I'd ask them if they were doing anything. And some of them, like many, said, I don't know what it is. So I think the number one thing is to really educate and inform them on what it is. There are many names, as I said, for it. Sustainability, corporate responsibility, a lot of different things. So really coming up with a definition that the company and the public understands. And then getting a leadership team, the members informed, creating a committee. But that committee's got to be somebody who's ready, willing, and has that drive to help change and kind of create a policy or practice.
I would guess it has to be multi-level, too.
Yes.
Where you've got high level with the lower level employees as well. Everybody working together and everybody with equal power.
That's
in
perfect.
The group.
You're absolutely right. Because this lessons learned, what happened at first was there wasn't enough of that cross-level on the committee. And so it was the senior execs would say, okay, you go do that. Well, that's not going to work.
Right.
If, you know, so right. Collaborated with the top all the way, you know, down to other levels. And so they kind of created a strategy and what the company was going to do for whom and in what areas. First of all, they got to look at the purpose of the company. Why are they there? And try to match that mission or purpose of the company with some kind of result-driven CSR activity, kind of like I mentioned earlier, with the heart and how that aligns with the nonprofit. And then really kind of come up with a strategy, a plan, but make sure that you don't just let it run. You got to come back and revisit it and say, hey, what's working, what's not working? What do we need to change? Are we going to continue doing this at a 3-month, a 6-month? And then changing committee members, things like that. That's just top of my head.
Okay, and I have a couple. One,
sure.
One obvious, and one radical.
Okay.
So you should expect no less. But the obvious is there's got to be some way that you could somehow, maybe not exactly with numbers, but somehow you could measure ROI in your recruiting, that we're getting, we got this person, we got these people because we did this, and look what this person is doing for your company.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could somehow attach performance to the people that came to the company because one of the reasons they came to the company was because of the CSR policies. Is that...
Yeah, absolutely that, right.
And then now you're showing the CEO, we're going to make you money. This is actually going to make you money. You're going to be able to take it to your board and say, not only are we really helping the world or our community, but we're making money in the process, which, you know, may sound like, it may not sound right to people, but keep in mind the objective of a company is to make money. So if they can do both, if they can show how doing that does both, it's wonderful. Now, I have my radical upside. I have an upside down idea. So you have cross level teams. What if you got a group of interested people that were manager level and below, and let them come up with a plan that fits with the mission? So this is really ultra ground roots. So they come up with a plan. They submit the plan to the executive team. The executive team doesn't have anything to do with it until they see what the employees are willing to do, what the employees would love to do. Then the executives get to knock it apart, red ink it, do whatever they want to do to it. And then they work together. The two of them work together. Then they join that team where you're that cross-level team. But I did that once with a leadership development plan, and it was the most amazing thing in the world. They wanted to know what were the competencies needed to be a supervisor, manager, director, vice president, blah, 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 blah. I started at the bottom and kept working my way up until I got to the very top. By the time I got to the very top, we had all of the qualities, all the attributes needed. The executives looked at it and said, that's perfect. Except it came from the people. So when they were measured according to that, they were measured according to their own criteria.
Ideal. That's beautiful. That's not too far off, Charlie. Come on. That's good.
Not a lot of people are doing that.
But to keep them out of it at first, and then you're absolutely right. I agree. They should come up with a strategy together with guidance, right, to keep them on track. But you're right to then present it to the
and then the executive board. So then the executive board can adopt it, and it's a whole corporate identity. It's not just something that came from the top that got pushed down, because it's like what we talked about before, Paul. What we talked about in corporate culture. If it just starts at the top, and they say this is going to be our culture, so everybody's going to do this. It can't work. It's a bottom up. I have a friend who told me that middle management runs every company. If you can get middle management to handle things and do things differently, the whole company will change if they're successful, because they have so much less to lose than the high level executives.
Yeah.
So they're willing to try. What do they have to lose?
Yeah, there's so many different ways to approach it.
Well, Karen, it has been, you know, we are, as always, we are over time.
Okay.
But this has been delightful having you on the show. Thank you so much for coming.
I truly enjoyed it. I wish I had been a little bit more prepared, but hey, you know
You wish you'd been more prepared. You're the most prepared guest I've ever had. Nobody's ever given me statistics.
Well, I enjoy helping. This was great. I appreciate you calling me to do this. It was really great.
Thank you for coming
on. You do a nice job.
Okay.
And Paul, you too.
All right. Thanks, everybody. This is Charlie Hedges, and you've been listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. Tune in next week and see what we have coming up.
You've been listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, right here on Orange County's only community radio station, octalkradio.net.